Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon Business Experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon Business Expert. Plus, Verizon Business Experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends? I'm just trying to make you some money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. You might not be able to tell from the averages. Dow inching down 13.8 points today. S&P advancing 0.18%. NASDAQ gaining 0.28%. But as we head into the heart of earnings season, this quarter has been very tough on the skeptics because there's been so much good and so little bad. Yet when it comes to the fundamentals, the bears keep getting stampeded by the bulls. That's why this market has been extremely resilient in the face of endlessly negative stories about how we're about to fall off a cliff. So let's start with the elephant in the room, economic policy. While there are both winners and losers from President Trump's aggressive moves on tariffs and trade, and at least for the near term, probably more losers than winners, the truth is that we've struggled to pin the tail on the bears here. Good companies keep addressing the trade issue head on, and very few have been knocked for a loop. Even as the dominant news narrative is that the whole economy is going to be KO'd. Certainly from my perspective, it sure seems like far more CEOs want to talk about the positives from the tax cuts than the negatives from the newer tariffs. Look, TNT, that's tariffs and trade, not dynamite, nor Tanqueray and tonic, can still blow us out of the water. When the president tweets almost daily about how our trading partners aren't partners at all and our allies are foes who rip us off all the time, it's not exactly a stable situation. Even though most stocks tend to bounce back after Trump's tweets, the fact is that his pronouncements on trade are very different from when, say, he blasts Amazon for alleged sweetheart deals with the U.S. Postal Service, as he did this morning. Amazon's got really nothing to worry about, though. Tariffs are different. We know the president's willing to pull the trigger. And someone always gets hurt when you change trade policy. Don't get me wrong. As a citizen, I think he's absolutely right to stand up to China. But as an investor, well, these trade tensions are not positive for the stock market. As long as President Trump appears erratic on these issues, or more accurately, often at odds with some of his staff, I say we have to be on guard. For example, I think the president's chief economic advisor, my old buddy, my friend Larry Kudlow, was spot on when he told me at Delivering Alpha last week that talks with Europe might produce a positive result. But then again, that was last Wednesday, which might as well be ancient history as far as this White House is concerned. I sure hope we make a deal with the EU. Automobiles are the crux of global commerce. And if he gets started seeing higher tariffs on cars, that's bad for the whole market. On the other hand, if Larry's right and the Europeans come bearing gifts, maybe we make a deal to drop all auto tariffs on both sides. I think this market could go much higher. Bye, bye, bye. For now, though, all we can really do is wait for a resolution. Fortunately, trade is not the only thing that matters to this market, and we now have enough earnings reports to start making judgments about what else is important. Let's start with technology, which is really kind of, when I look at the numbers, technology is divided between the cloud, else, especially telco. Microsoft versus Skyworks is the most withering example here. In many ways, Microsoft delivered the perfect quarter because it offered you sharply better than expected Azure numbers. That's their cloud business. And the company also excelled in gaming and its classic software and LinkedIn. But cloud hit it out of the park. How about China? Hardly a focus for Microsoft or other cloud plays, but it's supremely important for hardware companies like semiconductor maker Skyworks. While the chipmaker reported an excellent quarter with very strong cell phone sales, Skyworks was deemed too China. That's right, too China oriented. And the stock got crushed last Friday. The lesson here, stick with the cloud. Now tonight, Alphabet just blew away the numbers with a monster quarter. And again, the cloud figured positively. Big wins from giant cloud users like the technologically brilliant Domino's. Remember, we tell you it's a technology company that sells food. And, of course, the vast Target chain. The latter obviously not wanting to subsidize its mortal opponent, Amazon. Further, Alphabet has no China, having withdrawn from the PRC over censorship issues. Plus, it looks like Alphabet's business is so strong that we don't have to fret as much as some thought about the $5 billion fine recently handed down by the EU. European business, by the way, was incredibly strong. I think it might have been actually helped. I think they may be the big winner because of GDPR, that privacy standard that played out in Google's favor. There's just a ton to like about this company, which managed to reverse a niggling trend towards sliding down the day after it reports. All of FANG moved up in after-hours trading in sympathy with Alphabet. What else? All right, you got the banks, and this group seems to be totally controlled by long-term interest rates, which determine how much money they can make from lending. So when the yield on the 10-year Treasury jumped, and that's what's happened recently, the bank stocks come with it just kind of one-for-one, so to speak. Look at JP Morgan Citigroup today. The thinking here is pretty straightforward. With long-term interest rates headed higher, the financials will make more money. But they are already making a fortune anyway. Still, you can't quibble with these gains, and I think the bank stocks remain cheap here. I think that's going to be a continual theme as we go deeper and deeper into earnings season, that the banks turned out to be much too low a price-earnings multiple, given that rates could be headed higher. How about consumer packaged goods? People sure like what they've seen so far. I thought they wouldn't. I think the group did get too low. But any higher, and you know what? They start backsliding when interest rates go up. Just look at what happened to the stock of PepsiCo today. You know, caught a downgrade from a firm basically saying it had run too much after it reported. I disagree. I think the stock's just regrouping. Hey, what else? McCormick, the spice company. That's the one other real standout here. I don't think it's going to give up any of those gains. If anything, it's going to add to them, and we're going to have more from McCormick later. Healthcare, big sector, right? Well, you know what? When I look over the healthcare stocks so far, we've got an interesting panoply. I see tremendous pin action. But then limited follow through. I think J&J deserves more of a boost than it's gotten. It went up nicely first and then, Same with Abbott Labs. We're going to dig into that later. There were some real good quarters. United Health. Wow, standout. But then the stock got weaker. Why? Because the company beat itself up unnecessarily on the call. Danaher's the surprise healthcare winner so far, now that it's offloaded its sluggish dental business. The industrials, very tough. Aside from General Electric, we've been seeing some robust action, but it's all been in aerospace. You know, if it weren't for the power division, GE, which has a huge aerospace division, would have been fine. Although, wondering how GE would have done without power is kind of like asking. But other than the play, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? You know, it's really unfortunate. I went over that quarter multiple times, and rather than panning GE, I'm calling it a work in progress. Of course, Chief Baer on GE, Steve Tusa over at JP Morgan, has a new negative thread. The accounts receivable of regular GE offloaded onto GE Capital. But in retrospect, their accounting sure was squirrely, something we never would have known as long as business stayed strong. This stuff only came out when things started declining. I think CEO John Flannery is doing his level best to turn things around. But Rome wasn't built in a quarter, and this one won't be fixed in one either. Speaking of the industrials, can you believe how much Honeywell's making and how deaf the CEO, Darius Adamczyk, remember, he's Dave Cote's successor, has been telling about the story of breakup and all, a tour de force for certain. But on the other hand, a company we've had on a couple times on the show, Illinois Tool Works, long known for its consistency, has now become maddeningly inconsistent. That's quote for just plain for two quarters, bad. And the declines are pretty daunting. As I told ActionAlertsPlus.com club members, I question whether ITW should still be owned here. So let's say industrials right now are a question mark on a case-by-case basis. Retail is also hard to puzzle over. However, that question could be resolved by the positive commentary and forecast boost that we just got last Friday from VF Corp. The company delivered a quarter so good with strength coming from jeans, Vans sneakers, and North Face that I think it is fair to extrapolate right now positively to many of the brick-and-mortar stores that carry the stuff. I'm particularly interested in seeing Target. I think that acts well. I think Kohl's is having a super quarter. Here's the bottom line. Don't let all the fretting about tariffs and trade freak you out. You might miss the trees for the forest. So far, we've gotten a ton of positive earnings reports. And with the possible exception of the industrials, I think the course is now well blazed. And I bet these bullish numbers will serve as a template for things to come as we get through earnings season. Chris in my home state of New Jersey. Chris.
Hey, Jim. Booyah from New Jersey. It's Chris. I wanted to ask how you feel about Broadcom. I couldn't resist that 20% drop. What do you think of the merger with CA?
Well, the stock is coming back, and one of the reasons why it's coming back is that they're going to be able to get this deal done because they do not need Chinese approval to buy CA. Second, I do think that the mainframe cycle, which CA is levered to, is very strong. We heard that last week when we talked to IBM and Martin Schroeder. I thought he did a good job. So ultimately, I say that Avago, now Broadcom, is fine. Not great, not bad. Certainly better than some of the others, though. James in North Dakota. James.
Hey, Jim. Just wondering how you feel about the earnings report that just came out from Cleveland-Cliffs and if you think that the tariffs are actually helping this company out. I know they've got a firm footing now. What do you think?
They absolutely are helping it out. There was an upgrade this very morning from J.P. Morgan. It read very well. Obviously, the iron business is strong and the steel business is strong. Now, we know that Nucor actually uses scrap. But, John Ferriola told an amazing story last week. The stock was down incorrectly. That steel and iron sector is in bull market mode. All right. In your face, haters, we continue to see results that defy the skeptics, and I think the course is well blazed, the only exception being the split in the industrials. On Mad Money tonight, is it game on for Hasbro? Companies up over 10% after earnings. I'm talking with the CEO to find out if the move continues. Then, one company just put on a clinic of a conference call. I'll reveal the name and tell you why it was the best one I've heard in ages. And Spice, baby. I'm sitting down with the CEO of McCormick. Find out about the company's RB Foods acquisition. That's Frank's from the man himself. Stick with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow @JimCramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag mad tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
I love to say I told you so. 2 weeks ago, I told you to buy some Hasbro. The big
fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Toymaker, because I thought its stock was being excessively penalized in the wake of the collapse of Toys R Us. I figured this was just temporary disruption. It's not like they don't have other vendors. And I said I expect to see a comeback. But even I couldn't have to admit that I didn't expect it to turn around so quickly. This morning, Hasbro reported a much better than anticipated quarter, and the stock took off, vaulting $12 or 12.9%. The company delivered 19-cent earnings beat off of a 29-cent basis. And while its revenue still shrank by 7% year over year, that number was much higher than what Wall Street was looking for. Even better, management made it clear that the problems caused by the closure of Toys R Us are now mostly in the rearview mirror. They've got a clear path forward now thanks to new retailers picking up the slack, coupled with rising demand from consumers. So could the stock have more upside? Let's take a closer look with Brian Goldner, the chairman and CEO of Hasbro. Hear more about the quarter and where his company's headed. Mr. Goldner, welcome back to Mad Money.
Hi, Jim.
Well, first, Brian, congratulations. You came on last quarter and you said you could navigate this. Tell us how you were able to put the Toys R Us collapse behind you so quickly.
Well, we've continued to focus on building great innovative products, on entertainment and storytelling, and then modernizing our organization all around the world. Our U.S. team did a fantastic job of continuing to manage through the liquidation of Toys R Us, which is now complete. And now we're lining up for share recapture plans with the remainder of our retailers, building bigger programs for the holidays, working with the retailers we've worked with for years, adding some new retailers and new exciting categories around gaming and fans and some sporting goods. And then, of course, bespoke online program and omni-channel program. So we'll do content to commerce online and these shoppable social media opportunities.
Now, what was also amazing is you made it clear to people, look, it wasn't like Toys R Us. We made much more money in that particular group versus others. And you're talking about proprietary partner brands that are very exciting. Exclusives with Walmart, with Target, with Amazon Prime, with Singles Day in China. These are all probably excellent channels for Hasbro.
No, they really are. And then, obviously, as we go around the world, we're working through the European situation. And there's been disintermediation between online retail and the brick and mortar retailers. And we work through that as well. And we believe all these issues disappear by the end of 2018. And we move on. We've said we believe we can grow in 2019 and beyond. And we'll expand our operating margins as a return and get back to a 62% gross margin.
Okay, now you did talk about the idea that there's still a substantial amount of manufacturing that you have in China. It can shift. Is this something we should be concerned about in the second half?
Not really. We've really focused over time strategically on moving production out of China. So this has been going on for a number of years for risk mitigation and cost mitigation. We've moved product out of China. About 30% of our manufacturing is outside of China. You know, in the United States, we make 25% of the product for the United States in the United States, and we're continuing to add production. This fall, we'll add the Play-Doh production in the United States, and we'll continue to move product around the world to make a high-quality product. We found great vendors in India and Vietnam and other countries, as well as the United States. We're also moving product production to places where there are tariffs, like Brazil, so that we can mitigate those incoming tariffs with the Brazilian government. And we, again, continue to build a more robust global footprint for our manufacturing.
Now, you made a bold acquisition, Power Rangers. And I want you to tell our viewers what happens when you get something like Power Rangers, how you make it so it's more experiential. What storytelling message can you tell us right now about what you're going to do with Power Rangers?
Well, it's very exciting. In 2019, we'll launch the product line in the second quarter. And then by 2020, it's the full blueprint. So new entertainment, we'll move to not only annual television, but we're working again on another movie, and we'll execute it across the blueprint. So that's consumer products, mobile gaming, and immersive entertainment experiences, in addition to our toys and games business. We would expect it to look like a My Little Pony or a Transformers over time. And obviously, it will enjoy that high operating margin that we enjoy with our franchise brands.
All the time on your conference calls, there's always one brand that stands out that I thought was kind of a, not a dead brand, but just a so-so brand. You called out Dungeons & Dragons this time. I mean, that's been around forever. How does that reignite?
Well, people are more into Dungeons & Dragons today than ever before. In fact, it's enjoying its best year ever. It's been the last couple of years where it's grown. People are re-engaged with that brand because it's a face-to-face game, it's immersive, and it's a game that people really enjoy playing with one another. We have more new users coming on board, double-digit new user growth, and we're very excited about what's coming up. In fact, we just announced this afternoon that there'll be a crossover between Dungeons & Dragons and Magic the Gathering in the fall, and I think our fans and gamers are going to be very excited about what's coming for D&D. We're also building a suite of digital games around Dungeons & Dragons and Magic the Gathering. Our Magic Arena product is underway in a closed beta. We've had more than 1 million people sign up, and we're very excited about launching that later this year. So you'll be able to play Magic the Gathering or Dungeons & Dragons on a mobile device or online as well as face-to-face.
Now, how did you get 1 million so quickly? I mean, because what this makes me think is that now you've got a lot of people to sell into. You've got a lot of different extensions that you can do that could just make this so that it comes alive for multiple years.
Well, once you build this mobile game, we're also seeing that just with the analog game, people are watching us on esports. We have about 1 million viewers a month watching a Magic the Gathering game and people watching Dungeons & Dragons and Twitch. And so we think over time we build this to be more of an esports property. It's a very immersive game, and it's perfect and ripe for global esports competition.
One last point. You said that you thought your stock was too low. I saw how many shares you bought. It's just a standout quarter. You took advantage of the dip, didn't you?
Well, we're going to continue to look at buying back shares. We've said that we could buy in the amount of shares that we had issued to purchase the Power Rangers, which would be about 3 million shares. And our goal is, with strong cash flow, to keep buying in shares opportunistically.
Well, Brian, congratulations. You did. You exceeded what you said you would do. Brian Goldner, Chairman and CEO of Hasbro, thank you so much, sir. Not done going higher. It took a lot of people by surprise, including the analyst community. I predict many upgrades and target bumps tomorrow. Mad Money's back into the break.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Support for this program is provided by Chevron. Methane management is a critical part of achieving a lower carbon future. Chevron is taking action to keep methane in the pipe. Their 2028 upstream methane intensity target is set to be 53% below the 2016 baseline. They're committed to evolving facility designs and operating practices. And they've trialed over 13 advanced detection technologies, including drones and satellites. That's energy in progress. Learn more at chevron.com/methane.
I'm constantly telling you to listen to the quarterly conference calls. They are your single best source of information about how a company's actually doing. But how do you know if the call you're listening to is any good? How do you judge a call's quality? This is important. So let me give you an example. Last Wednesday, we heard from Abbott Laboratories. That's the Cramer fave healthcare conglomerate that we own from my charitable trust, which you can follow along with by joining the ActionAlertsPlus.com club. Abbott's all about diagnostics, medical devices, nutrition, and generic drugs, among other things. They're the global leader in blood screen immunoassay diagnostics, drug-eluting stents, point-of-care testing, heart pumps, adult nutrition. Now, I've been a fan of this company and its amazing CEO, Miles White, for ages. Last November, we ran a whole segment that was basically an ode to Mr. White's ability to create value. Since then, the stock's given us another nearly 14% gain, about double the performance of the S&P over that same period. And when Abbott reported again last week, wow, the company showed you exactly why I've been such a relentless backer of its stock. It's not because Abbott Labs delivered a monster blowout. The company posted a modest top and bottom line beat with a special boost to its full-year guidance. Good, but not earth-shattering. No, the remarkable thing here, the reason why Abbott stock shot to an all-time high last Wednesday for pulling back a couple of points was the conference call, what Miles White had to say. This was the best one we've heard in ages. Miles White Literally, he put on a clinic in how to orchestrate a conference call. I think it's actually worth going over because you need to see what this actually looks like if you're going to be able to spot a phenomenal conference call in the wild. Let's go through it point by point. First, Miles White briefly goes over the numbers. That's what all the CEOs do. Then he immediately goes into Abbott's corporate strategy. He talks about how they spent years deliberately shaping the company's portfolio, pruning businesses that didn't fit, like the drug business they spun off as AbbVie. And then making major acquisitions double down on other industries, like the $25 billion purchase of one of our absolute favorite companies, St. Jude Med, in January of last year to bulk up their medical device exposure. He explains that this is how Abbott can keep putting up 7% organic sales growth. That's a big number. Very fast for a $111 billion healthcare company. Yeah, this is not a small company. White then breaks down all four of the company's business segments, gives you a reason to be excited about, frankly, about each one. In diagnostics, they're rolling out a whole new system, Alinity, that's selling like hotcakes because it helps laboratories run more efficiently. In generic drugs, their sales are growing at a 12% clip, thanks to the company's exposure to fast-growing emerging markets. They're also seeing real strength in pediatric nutrition. And in the medical device segment, my favorite, there was so much I can't really do it justice, including a phenomenal cardiac business and a red-hot diabetes care division. They were up 22% and 30% respectively. At this point, White takes a break, turns the call over to CFO Brian Ewer, who does a deep dive into the numbers. He then really breaks things down, giving a rough organic sales growth forecast for each of Abbott's divisions in the next quarter. Given that Abbott had just raised its full-year organic growth guidance to 6.5 to 7.5%, think of this as the CFO explaining how they're going to get there, a roadmap. And now we get to the fun part, the Q&A session with the analyst community. By the way, all of whom are in awe of Mr. White. Listen to some of this stuff. Lawrence Beagleson from Wells Fargo wants to know how the company feels confident of its growth trajectory, given that they're coming up against some tough comparisons in the second half. White's response, not worried. Abbott's underlying markets are, and I quote, pretty strong. Now, how strong? Even though the dollar's been on the rise lately, and a lot of companies have complained about that, a bad thing for an American company that gets the bulk of its sales from overseas, of course, he's feeling confident. Let me read you this part verbatim. I'm quoting here. We'd probably be raising guidance even further here, but for the currency headwinds that we see for the remainder of the year. End quote. Wow. There it is. Would have raised. He explains that while there could be some noise in Abbott's generic drug business, which is a lot of emerging market exposure, the general direction is going to be higher, even if it might oscillate between being merely good and being great. Then he hits on what's working in nutrition, diagnostics, and medical devices, saying, while they may go up and down a couple of percentage points here and there, the underlying overall growth rate is pretty strong. And like I said earlier, we'll probably raise guidance further, but for the concern about the exchange, end quote. See, that level of confidence from someone who's been around this long, that's sensational. In short, he's incredibly bullish on the fundamentals. And the only thing that's stopping him from raising the guidance yet is the strong dollar. That's really the only piece of heroin this quarter, and White's adamant that they've got a handle on it. After that, Robert Hopkins from Merrill Lynch tries to pin White down on a specific durable earnings growth rate. The numbers keep coming up, coming in well ahead of plan. He wants to know at what point they're going to stabilize or stall. Rather than trying to deflect the question, White's incredibly transparent. Another thing I just love about this man, telling us that, I quote, we want to grow at a double-digit rate, otherwise difficult to call yourself a growth company, end quote. White explains how they'll get there, the right geographic markets, the right innovative spaces, the right growing healthcare areas, margin improvements. And even though he won't commit to a specific target, could be 10%, could be 15%, he let us know that, and I quote, we're in a really great new product cycle of launches. Every piece of this has a nice, sustainable long term ahead of it here. And the businesses, you can see the evidence of it growing, end quote. A masterful performance. While White refused to take the bait and pin himself to a specific number, he makes you understand exactly why he's so confident about Abbott's ability to grow its earnings over the long haul. That confidence is exuded in this call, and it makes you want to pay a higher stock price. That's what does it. My favorite part was when Rick Wise from Stifel, the acknowledged analyst dean of the sector, asked if they're planning to make any major changes to the portfolio going forward, either by selling off parts of the company that don't fit, maybe doing more acquisitions. Oh, most CEOs will hedge a question that an analyst asks like that. So because they get this question in some form or another every call, White just lays out his whole philosophy. Abbott Labs, as it currently exists, he says, is the result of, and I quote, very deliberate shaping, end quote, since the AbbVie spinoff nearly 6 years ago. White wasn't trying to be reactive or opportunistic in repositioning the business. Every move he made was part of a larger, overall, well-thought-out plan. Now that they have this finely tuned money-making machine, White tells us, quote, our first baseline is we've got to operate and execute well organically as a company, end quote. At this point, the intentional repositioning is done, as is most of the merger integration, as Abbott's way ahead of the schedule in paying down the debt from the recent deals. And White goes on and explains that Abbott can make some opportunistic acquisitions if they want to, but they don't have to. In fact, he adds, quote, the single biggest opportunities we've got are all in our own pipelines, end quote. What more can you ask for? Here's the bottom line. Abbott Labs put on a clinic of a conference call last week with consummate CEO pro Miles White, exuding a quiet confidence as he laid out all of the reasons why he believes in the company's growth targets. If you don't own Abbott already, I'd be a buyer right here.
Bye, bye, bye.
Dennis in California. Dennis.
Hey, how do you do, Jim?
I am good, Dennis. How about you?
I am wonderful, except for this. My question is about pharma company AbbVie.
Right.
Sadly, I bought shares and they've been falling, now down about 10%. The analysts sound like it's a bargain at this price. And because the company has new drugs in the pipeline, and it's getting into the production and sale of legal marijuana. I'd love to get your long-term view. Where you think this stock's headed?
Well, I like the marijuana business. Certainly not going to cue an AbbVie. It's Umira that's the problem. Now, I personally feel strongly that an analyst who put a sell on it and really talked it down is going to prove to be off base, even though I like them. And I think that AbbVie is a buy, and I would actually add more to my position right here to get a better basis. Let's go to Ken in California. Ken.
Hi, booyah, Jim.
Booyah.
I'm looking at Tandem Diabetes. It's up 300% this last year, and I'd like a fundamental and a technical opinion on it.
Well, you know, to have a stock that's up 1,000%, I mean, this thing has really been a rocket ship. I can't recommend it up here. I think that the diabetes, unfortunately and sadly, diabetes is an epidemic. Everyone involved with it is doing quite well. You know, if for specific diabetes play, so to speak, I like Dexcom. They've been on the show a number of times. They've been able to withstand the competition from Abbott. That's my favorite, and it's not as speculative as Tandem. Let's go to Alan in Pennsylvania. Alan.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Okay. I'm calling about Intuitive Surgical. I'm just a little intro. I know you know it.
Right.
They make and sell surgical robots for minimally invasive surgery.
Right.
And they're called Da Vinci Systems. It's a razor blade business. The systems being the razors and disposable instruments they
Correct.
Sell as blades.
Correct.
That 4,400 of these robots in hospitals worldwide, and they continue to ship a good deal of them.
Right. Well, look, Alan, I know it well. I actually gave a presentation that involved their product years ago and realized how great it was when I got spent a lot of time working, helping Overlook Hospital in Summit, New Jersey. And all I can say about this is that I think there's far more runway here. I think ISRG has always looked expensive, but I would still be a buyer even up here. And by the way, that last quarter was magnificent. All right. Abbott Labs. This earnings call was a thing of beauty. Kudos to CEO Miles White. I would be a buyer right here if you don't own any. Much more Mad Money ahead, including my exclusive with a company that can add a little spice to your portfolio. Don't miss my sit down with the CEO of McCormick. Then, do CEOs matter again? I'm telling you why management is relevant this earnings cycle. And I'm glad they are. And all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stick with Cramer. When a great CEO with a terrific long-term track record goes out on a limb and does something the stock market doesn't like, you might want to give them the benefit of the doubt. Take McCormick, MKC. It's the world's number one maker of spices and seasonings. Almost exactly a year ago, the company announced it would be paying $4.2 billion for Reckitt Benckiser's food division. And that includes famous names, Frank's Red Hot Sauce, French's Mustard. Stock got slammed in the news. People thought they were paying too much. But when we had the CEO, Lawrence Kurzius, on the show here, he calmly explained that these brands were worth every penny, especially since millennials put hot sauce on everything. I was convinced of the merits of the acquisition after that interview. Many people disagreed with me. That is until late last month when McCormick reported a blowout quarter, just stunning numbers, driven by much better than expected performance from, you guessed it, the Reckitt Benckiser business, chiefly French's and Frank's. Stock caught fire, vaulting 8.4% in a single session before tacking on a few more points. And believe me, there's some analysts who are still late to the party. I think it's got a lot more room to run, but don't take it from me. Let's check in with Lawrence Kurzius. He's the chairman, president, and CEO of McCormick & Company to get a better sense of where his business is headed. Mr. Kurzius, welcome back to Mad Money. Great to see you, sir.
Hey, Jim.
So good. Have a seat. Thank you so much for coming on. It's a triumphant year where you really did it just so right.
Well, Jim, it's been almost a year to the day since I was on your show. And you were no pushover. You asked a lot of hard questions. And this was a deal that wasn't universally popular. But at the end of the show, you told your viewers that you thought it was going to be a hit. And you were exactly right. We have had tremendous success, you know, with these brands. And the viewers who listened to you and took your advice actually would have beaten the S&P by 10 points if they had bought our stock.
Well, Lawrence, thank you. It was you. You told me why you thought it was good, and I agree with you.
I've actually got something special here for you.
Oh, get out of town. Oh, my God, my wife is going to have, which we do put it on everything. My wife is going to love this. A little close up there. Look, never looked better. Well, thank you so much. And yeah, I am a huge believer. I was at a restaurant this weekend. They had three different kinds. You're already got all new distribution venues. That's an incredible credit to your to the pull of McCormick.
One of the things we said when we bought this these brands was that these were fantastic food brands that were trapped in a non-food company. You put them into our business, you know, we're the experts in flavor. We've gotten tremendous placement in restaurants. We've been able to expand at the shelf. It's really been good for us.
Now, I think we're just getting started because on the call you talked about major national TV campaigns that are about to come out, and these brands haven't been supported like this.
That's absolutely true. You know, Frank's Hot Sauce actually hasn't been on television in over 7 years. We haven't even gotten to the TV campaign. That's coming this fall. But we'll bring Frank's back to TV. Of course, we're out there on digital and social media already.
Social media, this thing is incredibly popular. I looked it up before you came on. I had no idea that this is, as someone told me this weekend, it's something we do. He said, we do this. That's not what people say typically about food.
Frank's is something of a lifestyle brand. It's especially a lifestyle brand for millennials. And I know we've got a room full of millennials here today who can attest to that. But millennials are more interested in flavor than the general population. They are more adventurous in the foods that they eat. They like to cook more from scratch than the general population. And Frank's is a millennial brand. Literally, the younger you are, the more likely you are to be a consumer. This is one of the things that really appealed to us about Frank's.
But what's incredible, credit to you, Lawrence, is it wasn't just that you tied into the millennials. This was a brand that was my era, and you have reinvented this in less than a year's time. Shelf space, you're taking away from the other guys, and you're growing this.
French's was a brand that really got pushed around at the shelf. You know, the French's Food Company didn't have category management capabilities that were very good. You know, this is something that we're quite good at. We've taken the case to the retailers on this one. In many cases, secondary brands that had a fraction of the sales had as much shelf space as French's did. This has been a place where we've been able to grow.
Now, you didn't even have the benefit of a good grilling season. But now we're in the summer. You started that. I know that you were talking about a June kickoff for a campaign. But how are things going now that it got hot?
Well, things are going great. You know, we got a slow start to the grilling season just because it was cold and wet over a lot of the east and the south. We even had a tropical storm over Memorial Day weekend. But a normal weather pattern has set in. So, you know, our business does best when the weather does what consumers expect it to do, and normal consumption patterns can set in. So we're really excited about how the grilling season is going for us right now, and we're really looking forward to fall. You know, McCormick's business is heavily skewed to the end of the year around holidays and back to school and football season. You know, these are brands that are going to play well then, too.
You, I forgot how powerful this is among the wings community, and wings are incredibly popular. Just little things like King of Wings, you've decided to augment that.
Well, Buffalo Wings were actually created using Frank's hot sauce originally at the Anchor Bar in Buffalo, New York, and that's where the name comes from. So this is a real tradition. And we are embracing wings. Reckitt Benckiser had a King of Wings promotion that they ran in the springtime. We've more than doubled participation in King of Wings under our ownership, and we're bringing it back in the fall as well.
Okay, now speak to me. People didn't get to address it that much on the conference call. They talked about China and tariffs, but you know, obviously Canada's put some tariffs on the category. Where are you in the trade wars?
Well, you know, we believe in free and fair trade, and you know, we'd like to see our leaders work things out for NAFTA.
Right.
But so far, so good for us. There's no tariffs on mustard. Interestingly, French's mustard is made with 100% Canadian mustard seed, so the Canadians did not want to put a tariff on that.
It's supposed to hide.
And our ketchup, you know, French's ketchup for the Canadian market, we actually make it in Canada with Canadian tomatoes, so it doesn't have a tariff either. Now, in the U.S., we make it here in the U.S. as well. That goes to our philosophy of producing in the markets where we sell the product, which I think is going to help us out as we go through this whole uncertainty around tariffs generally.
All right, there's been a great boost in gross margins, but I'd be remiss not to ask you, core business really doing incredibly strong, right?
The core business is doing well. You know, what's really differentiated McCormick is that we've been hitting on all cylinders. So we've had great growth through new products, we've had great growth on our core business, and we've had an acquisition here that's been very successful for us. You know, we have doubled down on flavor and doubled down on growth. We see flavor as a growth category and ourselves as a growth company. We're investing behind these brands to continue to drive growth.
Well, Lawrence, I want to just congratulate you. You, a man of your convictions, it's been so incredible. And, of course, this wine is probably going to be your number one seller. That is Lawrence Kurzius, Chairman, President, CEO of McCormick & Company. This one's going higher. It is just now getting the support of the analyst community. Mad Money's back after the break. It is time. It's time for the lightning round. Crazy, what's about? Rapid Bulls, one on the stage, the star set of bye-bye-bye, social young leaders, it's called winning, only play the sound. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? Time for the lightning round. Kramer said, "Money." Let's start with Michael in New York. Michael,
how are you doing, Jim? My stock is Estee Lauder, symbol EL.
All right, the stock has really been marking time since the last quarter because there were some very small things that were concerned to people.
Bye.
I think it is a buy. I think Fabrizio Freitas is doing a remarkable job. You just picked some up. It's part of the selfie generation. Mark in Georgia, Mark.
Yes, I just want you to know I want to address you as Dr. Jim Cramer because of your expertise in the field that you're so enlightened about. And I'd just like to get your opinion on Primerica Financial Services at this point in time.
Okay, well, Primerica is doing incredibly well. It is really for the, let's say, the middle-income person. It's really one of the great financial advisors, and it's done incredibly well here, and I think it's going to continue. Let's go to Betty in New Jersey. Betty.
Hi, Kramer. How are you?
I am good, Betty. How about you?
That's good. It's great to talk to you. Love the show. And
thank you.
Going. Listen, I'm calling about Boston Beer Company, ticker SAM.
Yeah, I mean, this is amazingly, Sam's doing incredibly well. I think it was heavily shorted. It's making a comeback, but I do not like the beer category. I think it is saturated and there's too much competition, and I would be a seller of half my position if I own any. Let's go to Todd in North Carolina. Todd.
Hey, booyah, Jim. This is Todd from Winston-Salem.
Oh, great to have you on the show, Todd. What's going on?
Hey, I got a question for you about Axum Enterprises. This looks like a great stock, great potential to move forward and grow. but the PE is kind of high at 297. Do you think this is a great time to buy the stock?
Oh, boy, we liked it in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. Yeah, look, I'm afraid to say we'll wait to continue to buy it up here because it's at 75. We've been such stalwart supporters of it. I think now you got to wait for a pullback. I can't come in right now with guns blazing saying time to buy when I've been saying it's time to buy for 50 straight points. David in Oregon. David.
Hello.
David, what's up?
This is David, Portland, Oregon. I own HP Inc. and all of the spinoffs, and it seems like HP and HPE have some obsolete business models, components, and I'm wondering if I should hold on to
HPQ. Well, I disagree when it comes to pure HPQ, the old HP, the PCs. HP Inc., I think, is doing incredibly well. And I would be a buyer of that stock right here. HPE is hard for me. Don't feel that way. Mark in Maryland. Mark.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah, Mark.
Mark from Maryland. Love your show.
Thank you.
My stock is Vail Resort.
Oh, Vail's incredibly well run. That is an experiential place which is just fantastic, and I think it's still a buy. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
Do the performances of individual CEOs matter again? Is stock picking making a comeback? I've been investing for 36 years, and for the vast majority of that time, we accepted that the market worked a certain way. For example, we knew that about half of a stock's performance could be traced to the sector it happened to be part of, and the other half came from the fortunes of the company itself, with most of that hinging on the decisions made by management. But with the ascendance of index funds, sector-based ETFs in recent years, that's no longer the case. These days, it seems like only a handful of executives are skilled enough to buck the secular trends that control their sectors. You can think of these winners as FANG and friends. Aside from them, though, I've seen figures that suggest that up to 75% of trading is either automated or related to ETFs, not individual stocks. Think S&P funds, okay? However, something's happened, really, in just this quarter that makes me think stock picking may be coming back into vogue. I'm talking about the wildly disparate performances of stocks within the same sector. I saw it a little bit last quarter, but since this quarter began, I'm really seeing it a lot. Case in point, oil service. Last Friday, Schlumberger reported an excellent quarter where the company predicted positive momentum both for the second half and all of next year. Schlumberger's been buying back stock and preparing for the upturn in international drilling, which is just starting to happen. Competitor Halliburton, though, on the other hand, turned out to be way too levered to the Permian Basin, the oil-rich region in Texas, where the take rate is severely limited by a lack of pipeline infrastructure. Nobody's going to boost their drilling budget if there's not enough pipe to get the oil to market. Schlumberger saw this coming, which is why they didn't fall over themselves trying to build up business in the Permian Basin. The result? Schlumberger's stock hangs in there, down 0.5% today, even as Halliburton gets slaughtered, down 8% because of the Permian problem. How about toys? We heard from Hasbro earlier tonight. The company navigated the collapse of Toys R Us and fine time. While they didn't see the fall of Toys R Us coming, Hasbro's reaction to the loss of its chief outlet was swift and decisive. Mattel, on the other hand, equally blindsided. But it has yet to lay out a plan or a vision for how to move past the loss of Toys R Us. It just wallows in disappointment. The stock price reaction is stark and shocking, which is why the stock of Hasbro is doing much better than the stock of Mattel, double the percentage gain for the year. Same goes for the industrials. Last week, General Electric reported a widely panned quarter, where analysts simply weren't able to get their arms around the continued weakness in power and what seemed like a more widespread degradation in GE's margins. This morning, Illinois Toolworks, ITW, reported its second disappointing quarter in a row. I like GE's restructuring, but no one ever promised you a rose garden in that thicket. Illinois Toolworks, I'm dumbfounded by the company's inability to chart a path different from the previous quarter's fiasco. Meanwhile, Honeywell, a company that has a lot of overlap with ITW and GE, totally shined when it reported last Friday, with both rising margins and pending restructuring that will unlock even more value. It soared, and it kept rallying today. We've seen tremendous variance among the biotechs and in the retailers in the last few months, too. In fact, the only group that's still trading pretty much in lockstep is the banks. When long-term interest rates go higher, as they did today, the whole financial cohort moves up, too. When rates are calm or declining, they all go down. there's been almost no differentiation in that group whatsoever. But in a way, the banks are the exception that proves the rule. Everywhere else, management's execution finally matters again. And that means stock picking is therefore back in style. It's such a pleasure to see stocks trading like, well, stocks, and not baskets of corn or soybeans. I say enjoy it while it lasts and stick with Cramer. So much good stuff from this Alphabet call. You have to like the machine learning issues. You got to like what they're doing, artificial intelligence. But you know what really stands out, aside from the home assistant? It's the Waymo. It's their autonomous driving. It's really doing incredibly well. Like I said, there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.